This is Conspiranormal.
All right, guys, welcome back to Conspiranormal, and it's your host Adam
and Serfiel,
and we are continuing to wind down 2021, but as we're doing that, we're just kind of like going back and talking to some of our favorite guests, and we've got with us Mr. Timothy Renner.
Always great to be on Conspiranormal.
Always great to have you, Tim. You have been on probably like 10 or 15 times at this point. Between
has it been that much?
All the actual times, like the actual shows just dedicated to you, are the roundtable episodes and the Strange Realities previews. It's probably been about that if I had to count.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
And then also we've got Tim's good friend, who's also appeared a lot on his podcast, Strange Familiars, Chad Redding, who's first time on Conspiranormal.
Yeah, thanks, guys. It's an honor to be here a little bit.
Yeah, thanks for being with us. You know, I feel like I know you a little bit since I've listened to Strange Familiars so much.
Chad was going to drive me to Strange Realities this year.
That's right. That's right.
And yeah. We decided we couldn't go for various reasons, but you would have met him, but maybe next time.
Yeah. Well, maybe next year.
We'll get there. We'll make it happen eventually. Yeah. We'll get there. So awesome. I definitely wanted to come down. I've never been to Knoxville?
Nashville.
Sorry. I've never been to Nashville. It would be awesome to see the city. Been to Tennessee once, but never there.
What part of Tennessee did you go to?
Oh, geez. I can't remember. It was ages ago. I was young. So I went down for, my family was growing up, was into street rods, old cars. Cool. So they went down there for a car show. So.
Yeah, it's a beautiful state. It's a beautiful state. I mean, Pennsylvania honestly really reminds me a lot of Tennessee.
It strangely does. I was just up there. I did not expect that.
Right. Yeah, Pennsylvania's gorgeous.
Where were you at?
I was just
in... You don't mind me asking.
Yeah, just Philadelphia area, and then we went up to Woodstock, New York. But we passed through Quakertown, and I visited... Climber and the Rosicrucians pyramids there at that little weird campus they got. So that was pretty cool.
That's cool. Yeah, I love Philly.
I haven't been out y'all's way really too much, but it was very nice.
Yeah, that stretch of road kind of between Philadelphia and Gettysburg that I drove is really nice. Except I got stuck in traffic in York, Tim. But other than that, I was okay.
Well, it was around Albertwitch Day.
Traffic.
The people flood in for Albertwitch Day, you know.
That's what it is. But you guys have something that's like really spectacular that is just, I guess it's out now, right, Tim? Like, cause it said on the Bandcamp, it said December 25th, but it is available for people to purchase.
Yeah. People should be getting their books. I just did that as a safety date. Cause you never know with the printers and with delays now, especially in supply chain delays and stuff. It's hard to promise a specific date. So I put the date way out, but we have books in hand now. We're expecting a second shipment probably in the first week of December. So books are going out, and I will release the audio probably next week. So everybody will be able to, you know, get the whole mixed media project.
Yeah. Excellent. And that's exactly what this is. So kind of explain to him, about how like you kind of formatted this and how you're actually releasing it and like what people can get with this before we really start talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's called the Witch Cloud, and we were looking for a project to do for episode 300. This is Strange Familiars episode 300. So this is, you know, way back, and I'm always thinking ahead. And, you know, I had mentioned to Chad, and at any time, Chad and I probably have five different sort of research projects going at once. Sometimes maybe more.
Yeah.
And it's constant. I had mentioned to him like, hey, I need you know, something to do something big for episode 300. I don't know what it's going to be. And we were kind of like bopping some ideas around, and we were in Gettysburg one night, just hiking. We were just hiking, doing a night hike around the battlefield. And we're kind of looking for someplace to go. The battlefield closes at 10, I think. And I said, well, there's this place that I went. I actually went there with you, Adam, the first time.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I remember that quite well. Yeah.
Yeah. That people call Suicide Bridge. And I said, let's go there. And I kind of told Chad the, you know, the basics of what I knew. And we went there and started having some pretty interesting experiences and meeting people there who had experiences and so forth. But probably by our third visit there, because we kept going back, probably by our third visit, we were talking, and I think Chad probably said, is this episode 300? And I thought about it. I said, yeah, I think it is. And then we kind of talked about it, the ways we could make it special and so forth. And at some point, I decided, well, we should make it this into a book. This could be my next book, because it's kind of like my first book, Beyond the Seventh Gate, where I kind of take a local legend or a local, you know, area that's supposed to be haunted or something,
right,
and just dig in and break it down and like look at it from every angle we can. So at some point, you know, it just became this multimedia project where I said, well, hey, let's make a book and let's see if we can, you know, honestly, we're always trying to raise a little extra money for the podcast. So I said, let's make it a multimedia project. And if people want, you know, they can get the book, they can get a download of the audio book. And like I was saying before we recorded, this isn't a straight audio book. I do read the text, but in places where I talk about, you know, us hearing weird sounds or something, I'll clip in the actual audio of the sounds. And in places where we interview people, I clip in the actual interview. So it's not just me reading the text of the interview. And of course, I did illustrations because I'm an artist. And my friend Tara, she's from the band Lycia, and we had a band together called Black Happy Day, and we hadn't recorded anything in 15 years. And I was kind of sharing her the audio, giving her some previews and stuff, and sent her the song I'd been working on. And she sends me back this you know vocal track that she did. For it completely surprised me. So, you know, we were able to do the first Black Happy Day song in 15 years or more than that, I think. So I did a limited edition I did with a little record of that, but those sold out quickly, like in a day. The rest, you know, get the song when you download it, the download when you purchase the whole package. And you can do the book and the download or just the audio download or whatever. There's different kinds of options. But yeah, so it just became this big multimedia project that's like super fun, a lot of work, but it's the kind of work I love to do.
Yeah, and so it's really amazing, Tim. I, of course, like I said, I listened to it last night. I mean, you've got a couple of different packages here with it, right? Like I think you can get...
Yeah, he's talking about the one that just sold out with the...
yeah, I did a 5-inch record with the song that Tara and I did. And
oh, wow.
That was a picture disc, a lathe cut record. I don't know if you know what they are, but they're cut one at a time. They're not pressed like other records. Mm-hmm. It was that, and that we did 50 copies of that, and that sold out like less than 24 hours. That was gone.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I think we were counting down. It was what, 12 hours or something like that.
I think maybe you're 14.
A little countdown party online. Yeah. It went really quick.
And all this stuff is of course covered with your artwork and design. So
yeah. Yeah.
Get that Timothy Renner aesthetic to everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And the book's fully illustrated. Like I really kind of, every book I've been doing, I've been kind of learning how to design books a little better each time and learning what I can do with design and books. So this one has like illuminated letters and, you know, illustrations and photos and stuff, and even hand drew a little map of the area. I wanted it to like give that Lord of the Rings vibe, you know,
yeah.
You know, so I hand drew a map.
Nice. Nice.
So yeah, I really kind of wanted to make something special, and I'm super happy with it. I'm super happy with the end result.
The first thing I really want to cover is the concept of the witch cloud, where you get that title. What does that mean?
I found a reference in an old article on folklore from the newspaper. And it is a guy named Henry Shoemaker, who is an excellent folklorist. He's not the best linguist. A lot of his like German translations will be off, but he's an excellent folklorist. And he was responsible for kind of documenting a lot of wonderful folklore in Pennsylvania. And it was an article in the Altoona Tribune from March 20th, 1939. And he was describing this area that had all these different phenomena going on in the same area. People were seeing ghosts of elk there, and they were having like werewolf sightings and stuff. And he described it, and he said that what it was called in Pennsylvania, they called it the witch cloud. And this is the quote from the article from, again, March 20th, 1939, from the Altoona Tribune. Where the witch cloud hovers, anything may happen, even a specter elk, a werewolf, or even a brooklock, as the very old Pennsylvania mountain people call a vampire. Hmm. All of which reminds one of George H. Burroughs' deathless description of the Estadia of Spain. The Estadia are spirits of the dead who ride upon the haze, bearing candles in their hands. So the idea is like when you get these areas where these multiple things are happening, you know, they would say it's, you know, it's a witch cloud. So all this stuff was coming out, you know, get these different reports of like cryptids there or cryptid like things and ghosts. And even, you know, Chad was the first one to suggest that it might be whatever's going on there might be vampiric in nature. And he was quite serious about it because he was getting sick pretty regularly when we were at this area.
Well, we were both getting sick the day after for sure.
You know, yeah, you a lot more than me though. It definitely affected you.
Yeah. Yeah, it still messes with me when I go there.
Did you still want to continue going, even though it was just fascinating enough that you still wanted to go?
Yeah, it's got some kind of draw for me, and I don't understand why. Like, I was attending some personal business in the courthouse the one day in Gettysburg, and I turned around and there was a picture of the bridge. Like somebody had taken pictures of the bridge or of different landmarks in Gettysburg, and it was there. And I don't know, for some reason, I just like going there. I don't understand why, but it's got some kind of draw. So I've never been afraid to go back to places where I've experienced phenomenon. So that was never like an issue for me. I mean, it would have to be really, really strong and powerful for me to not want to go back to a place. If that,
mm-hmm. So. And there is a possible connection.
Helps explain it.
Yeah, and there's a possible connection that you guys reference. If you guys want to share that.
Yeah. Well, so the way we do research is we dig in historically. So we'll like try to figure out everything we can about the area historically. And also look at the paranormal stories associated with it and do all the digging we can. And at some point I was digging up these old newspaper articles, just looking for anything in that region. And I kept finding reference to this Redding's Bridge. They were calling it Redding's Bridge. And I said to Chad, I'm like, Chad, is this the Iron Bridge? This, you know, so-called suicide bridge is now called John Eisenhower Bridge formally. It wasn't named that though until the 60s, I think, after Eisenhower retired and he moved to President Eisenhower. He retired and moved to Gettysburg. Then the bridge was renamed, I think, after his son, John Eisenhower.
That's right. Yeah.
But before then, you know, I don't know what people called it, or we didn't know what people called it. And we kept finding reference to this Redding's Bridge. And then one of the articles described the landmarks and everything around it. And I said, Chad, could this be like the bridge? Was it called Redding Bridge? And sure enough, it was.
Yeah. So, well, I think we found also that all that land around the bridge on the other side, I mean, the farm that Eisenhower bought was actually owned by Reddings.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And we yeah. we aren't sure if 100% if it's relative to Chad's, but there's not that many Reddings in the area, honestly.
No, there isn't. There isn't. I mean, I haven't done any genealogy yet. I mean, that's something I'm going to go back and actually do.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
That's Allison's department. She hasn't gotten to that yet. I've had her busy researching other things.
should point out that, like, the land, of course, it's on the Gettysburg battlefield or just outside it, but right next to the Gettysburg battlefield is actually the Eisenhower historic home, which is
right,
as you just mentioned, where he lived. So that's actually owned by the Park Service, I think.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think the bridge, if you go across the one, correct me if I'm wrong, Tim, but when you go from Red Rock Road and you go across that one field, I think the farm is back over there.
Yeah. In fact, correct? that one night we walked up, we shouldn't have done that. I mean, we didn't know, but that one night we kind of walked up onto Eisenhower land there. We were kind of pursuing something and walked up in there. We didn't know at that time, but yeah, that's all Eisenhower land.
Come to think of it, Tim, when I was in the bus, cause you got to go, you can't like drive to the Eisenhower place. You got to park at a visitor center, and then they take a little van to it or a little bus. And when I was on the bus, I saw the bridge and I was like, oh, that's the bridge that I was with Tim the other night.
Yeah. So yeah. I think if you look east, if you look east from the Iron Bridge, you will look across the Eisenhower farm property and you can see, and the battlefield is beyond that. So you kind of get the battle. It's battlefield, Eisenhower farm, Eisenhower bridge, basically right there.
Before we kind of get to the more personal things, I want to talk a little bit like the Gettysburg area in and of itself and just kind of like the weirdness of it, because a lot of people think about Gettysburg, obviously in relation to the battle and to the hauntings that have probably occurred because of the battle and the reason why it's such a ghost hunting like Mecca, really. But there's a lot of other weird stuff that has happened at Gettysburg.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, going back to before the Civil War, you know, there's this, I have a couple quotes in the book from early newspaper articles that, quote early settlers as talking about how the place was filled with like spooks and, as they called them back then, you know, ghosts and stuff. And that was, you know, well before the battles ever happened there. And there's, it's kind of some hazy, history about a Native American battle. They call it the Battle of the Crows. Now, it's kind of hard to prove this, and it, you know, it's based on some a bunch of arrowheads and axe heads and spearheads that were found in one area, and some human remains, like, again, before it was ever, you know, the Civil War battlefield, the residents were finding it there. So they just assumed there was this big Native American battle there, which, you know, may or may not have been, but you know, it's really hard to prove that either way, but there is, you know, this kind of rumored history of this big Native American battle there that at some point somebody named it the Battle of the Crows. I don't know where they got that name, but so it starts with that. But there's Bigfoot sightings around, there's been, you know, UFO sightings on the battlefield, a lot of stuff. And yeah, as we get into in the book, there's and, you know, we can get into this now or later, as regards ghost stories in Gettysburg, there's some, you know, questions as to these stories. Are they based on real events and real people, or are they things people made up?
Well, let's get into some of that. Oh, go ahead, Chad. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I wanted to also say something. That area, and when I say that area, I'm not talking just Gettysburg in itself. Most people, when they think of that area of Adams County, they only think of the Civil War history. Yep. And there is actually a lot of history in that whole area, that it was contested land even before the Civil War, because when that area was in the, I guess it would be the mid 1700s, when that area was the, oh gosh, sorry. I just blanked out. When that area was the frontier, the French and Indian War, a lot of French and Indian War battles happened there also. And even when, if you go like south of Gettysburg, that was actually contested land between Maryland colony and the Pennsylvania colony. And there was actually a lot of fighting that happened between Maryland and Pennsylvania in that area before they made the Mason-Dixon line. So that's something else that was, you know, that is to be taken into account also. And then something that bothers me also, I shouldn't say bothers me, it's not the right word. Something that a lot of people forget, they'll say, oh, you know, the Gettysburg Battlefield. The thing is, York and Adams County was basically the whole battlefield. And a lot of people forget that. They, you know, yes, the main battles were fought there in Gettysburg, but there was a lot of skirmishes. You know, even in, you know, if you look at just Wrightsville and Columbia itself, Hanover was another area, southern York County and areas north of Gettysburg. So really, I look at the whole area from almost the Susquehanna River all the way through to Michonne Pass as, you know, really a lot of stuff happened, if that makes any sense. So,
yeah.
A lot of people forget that.
Very inhabited, very contested.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It makes perfect sense. And I mean, when we were there, Tim, we were actually at Devil's Den. We talked about some of this, and we talked about how it's almost like talking about, like, obviously the Battle of Gettysburg and then, like, the Battle of the Crows, and that it's almost like the place almost, like, drew these things into itself. And Devil's Den, I mean, there's kind of a
devil name.
That was Devil's Den is not named because of the battle. It's there's like actually some almost kind of like fairy folklore stuff going on with that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of different stories about it. And again, you know, stories predate the Civil War. One of the stories was that there was a giant snake there that they called the devil. And we get these stories of these giant snakes locally. I don't know if they're a regional thing or a national thing, or is more of a Pennsylvania, Maryland thing, but go back in the old newspapers, we often get these stories of these like giant snakes, like anaconda sized, you know, black snakes people report in these old newspaper reports and stuff. So that's one theory how the place got its name. But I believe it was, the name was established Devil's Den before the battle as well. And yeah, there's, again, that right there in that that area, I think it's to the where the Indian fields, what they call the Indian fields, were right around there, and that's where they were finding all, like I said, all those arrowheads and axe heads and spearheads from this supposed Battle of the Crows. So that would have happened, you know, right in that same area too.
Yeah, and then there's also, you mentioned there's the cryptid sightings there. Which one that I really just love, that's like, I think, probably my favorite Bigfoot sighting ever now.
the Kentucky Fried Chicken one?
Yes.
Yeah, so I didn't even get into like too many of the historical ones. So the sort of Gettysburg basically, you know, is in the foothills of the South Mountains. And the South Mountains essentially become what is Michaux State Forest now. And people always ask me, like, you know, best place in Pennsylvania to look for Bigfoot. And for me, hands down, Michaux Forest. I think Michaux has more sightings than just about anywhere. Allegheny National Forest might be giving it a run for its money lately, but I still think Michaux edges it out. So we're, you know, again, it's right there. I mean, Michaux's right, you know, right there outside of Gettysburg. So a lot of these historical...
Yeah, you can literally see it.
yeah. A lot of these historical sightings come from the towns all around Gettysburg, these little mountain towns on the edge of Michaux and stuff. In my book, Bigfoot in Pennsylvania, you can kind of follow these sightings through these mountain towns and stuff. So I didn't even get into all of those. We just looked at kind of the more modern sightings. So yeah, the one was, I think it was a 9 or 10 foot creature. Somebody was going to work at midnight or something, and they passed the dumpster at KFC, and there's this, creature eating presumably chicken out of the dumpster. I remember hearing the report on I don't think it was Sasquatch Chronicles. I think it was another Bigfoot podcast years and years ago. And I think they said that like the guy actually saw the thing with a bucket of chicken in the dumpster, just chowing down.
That's awesome.
So the real question, the real question is, was it original or extra crispy?
Yeah, exactly. He's apparently a fan of the herbs and spices, right? That's
yeah, yeah. The cracklings wow. just have to be just right.
So, there's actually two bridges, but I also want to kind of explore this idea of bridges, liminal space. This is something that definitely, even before you mentioned it, when I listened to the, well, I guess, episode, when I listened to it, I thought, okay, you know, bridges, liminal space, and this kind of concept.
Yeah, it's hard to find a more liminal place than a bridge, right? It literally right. connects one place to another.
I was thinking, too, that it's kind of uniquely human, right? Like, you might have some wildlife who might, like, beavers might kick over a log on over a stream or something like that, and other animals create their own paths and what could be, like, roads, and actually, like, a lot of roads are based on old traces and things like that, but it seems like these are pieces of the landscape that are, like, kind of the first real human sign, you know, that couldn't be done by anything else.
Yeah. Yes. That's an interesting way to look at it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's extremely, I would say important probably for people to build bridges, if they need to get, you know, from one place to another safely or easily. These two bridges, I mean, I think you could probably cross either one of those two creeks. Like, you know, if you were a pioneer and there was no bridge there, it wouldn't have caused anyone, you know, too much trouble. It would have been more of an inconvenience than anything else with these two creeks. But they're definitely, you know, talk about liminal things, you know, it hit me, you know, pretty early on in this. Like, we're just talking about literally an in-between place, you know, just the most in-between you can be from one, you know, hovering over a creek in this case, both of these bridges, and then, you know, the connecting these two areas. So yeah, there's two bridges. The Sachs Covered Bridge, which is the famous one. If you've seen like a documentary on Gettysburg ghosts and stuff, chances are they've covered Sachs Covered Bridge. It's very, very popular. As Chad was saying, I think before we were recording, you can't go there any time without finding ghost hunters, pretty much, especially once it gets dark. I mean, and all night long.
Are they coming from like way outside of the area too, like from all over?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're from all across the country. I think I've actually encountered people from, you know, other countries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And,
you know, that have come to Gettysburg.
At its worst, we've had to, like, it's been difficult to, we had to push through people, but it's definitely been like, if you imagine like a crowded shopping center or something, that kind of crowd on the bridge where you kind of have to weave your way through people. And they're all ghost hunters. They're all got their you know, ghost boxes yeah. going and their meters and all their, well, you know.
One guy was that you met was doing, he was actually leading a tour, right? Like an actual like ghost tour.
Yeah.
Oh, we met multiple tours.
Yeah.
Multiple tours.
The fellow we talked to in the book, his name was Clinton. And boy, he was a pleasant surprise though. As far as the ghost people go, he really, you don't run into that kind of open-mindedness as regards the other too often. And especially yeah. not that I'm beating up on ghost people, but they're very focused on ghosts and they're very focused that ghosts are all dead people running around and they're contacting specific dead people. And I have some questions about that myself. But this fellow Clinton was way more open-minded about it, and his approach was very, very I don't want to call it very Strange Familiars, but I'd say it would have fit well on Strange Familiars. I don't want to take credit for his approach, yeah. But
well, the typical ghost hunter's method seems so opposed to like what you guys do, and I mean you record. And do your field recordings and stuff. And you guys use a ghost box, but It just seems so much more different. You guys seem so much more quiet and kind of like relying on your own senses than like all this high tech stuff.
Oh yeah. And Chad can attest to this as well. When we were on, so we didn't spend a ton of time on the covered bridge just because there's so many people there. And we found, especially on the other bridge, on the Iron Bridge, the so-called suicide bridge, if people are there, things won't happen. Mm-hmm. If there's a crowd of people there, you're not going to get any activity. You'll get very, very mild activity. It's when we would wait there and we'd have to wait out sometimes, you know, hours for these ghost hunters to, you know, different groups to come and go. And we'd finally get it to ourselves. And then when things would settle down and we were, you know, there was just a few people there, that's when we would get activity. So I think, you know, we didn't spend a ton of time on the covered bridge because we could never get any time alone there. It was just, always people there.
Yeah.
And we just felt like, well, it's probably nothing's going to happen. Now that isn't a hard and fast rule. I've talked to several people, including that guy, Clinton, that ghost tour guy, who said he's had stuff happen when there's been tons of people around, but it's just our experience when we were there. And I'm sure Chad would agree is if there's people there, we almost walk away like, it's not going to happen for us tonight.
Yeah. Yeah. It usually what we would wait a little bit and then it would take a half hour for things to kind of settle in, if that mm-hmm. is the best way to describe it. And I personally have had an experience. I think you even covered this in the episode at Saks Bridge myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that was early, early in the morning and there was nobody else there. It was one of them rare times when there wasn't nobody there. But, I agree with Tim. You know, it seems to be that whatever the phenomenon is, whatever is going on there, I don't even know if phenomenon is even the right word, because we have no idea what it is really in the end. Whatever's going on at both those bridges seems to be more reactive the less people you have there.
Yeah, I wonder too, like the night that we went, Tim, that first night that we went, that you went, whether we just had one too many people there or something.
Yeah, I don't know, because we've certainly had 3-4 people there. And yeah. And even when Chad and Sarai and I were there, a good example of this is in the bonus audio from October 9th, I think it was. There's a whole like bonus sort of podcast on site thing we did with Sarai after Albatwitz Day this year. We went over.
Well, you took Sarai there. That's why. I mean, weird stuff always happens to Sarai.
But there was people there. Then finally we got the bridge to ourselves for about, you know, a half an hour, 40 minutes and stuff started happening. Even, you know, Sarai, I was like, look, see that light over there, you know? And he's like, oh yeah, I see that. And we were hearing stuff and stuff. And then people came and it was done. It was done. So, you know, and Chad's right. It was about 20 or 30 minutes of us being on the bridge and just sitting calmly and just letting things happen where things would start to build and yep. then things would start to happen, but then people came and, you know, people ruin everything.
Right.
It was actually palatable. Like you can actually feel when it's going to start happening. At least that's always been my impression. Like you can feel when it starts to ratchet up, so mm-hmm. to speak.
Yeah. You get that kind of energy in the air, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, Tim, what's the history of the bridge and the suicide bridge and some of the, like, I guess the rumors that, I guess the urban legends that kind of surround it?
Yeah, the first time I ever heard of it, I was actually at a paranormal convention in Scranton. And I was just kind of hanging out. I'd only had one book out at the time, so I didn't have the crowd of people that I get at my tables now. Nobody knew who I was. So I was just hanging out and kind of listening to what was going on, you know, talking to people when they come up to my table, but mostly I'm just kind of absorbing what's going on around me. And there was this ghost hunting group there. And I heard them talking about Gettysburg. So I'm kind of listening, you know, eavesdropping a little bit. And I heard them say, by far the scariest place in Gettysburg is Suicide Bridge. And I get this image in my head of a bridge, and I knew it was an iron bridge because they were talking about, you know, they said, well, when we were there, something was hitting the bridge and it, you know, banging on the bridge or something like this. And I knew it was an iron bridge from their conversation. But the image I had in my mind is a very tall bridge over a gorge that people were jumping off of, you know, to commit suicide. So, when we went, Adam, you know, you were with me the first time I went there, I was deeply disappointed. I'm looking at that. I think I even just said, oh, it's broken ankle bridge. No one's killing themselves if they jump off this bridge.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty low to the creek. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was kind of, you know, and I knew there were, you know, these stories of suicides associated with it, but I thought they meant that people had jumped off the bridge. I was like, what a ridiculous notion. I mean, maybe if you literally landed on your head on a rock, you might do it. But short of that, I don't think you'd do anything more than injure yourself if you jumped off of it. But, you know, later I kind of started digging in and we started talking to people on the bridge that we met. And there's various stories. One of them is a woman killed herself on the bridge. And usually people are hanging themselves from the bridge. So these aren't people that jumping off the bridge commit. So they're hanging themselves from the ironwork on the bridge. Another story we heard was that there was a guy, they only gave his first name, but he had, you know, lost his wife and kids, I think, you know, through a divorce or something, and was, you know, distraught and came and killed himself on the bridge and so forth. And I kept asking these people for names and dates because this should all be stuff I could find. Mm-hmm. If this happened, I should be able to find it. There should be record of this. And I couldn't find any record. I mean, I'm going back to, you know, the bridge was built in, I think, 1886. I'm going back, you know, to the 1880s and the newspapers, just looking for any story of anybody, you know, having killed themselves on the bridge. Couldn't find a thing. Now, what we did find is there's another story associated with Saks covered bridge, with the wooden bridge, that supposedly some General Longstreet, as they were retreating from Gettysburg, they had some deserters, some Confederate deserters, three of them, and that he hanged them from the wooden bridge and left them there as a warning to other, you know, would-be deserters. So I started, you know, kind of working with this idea of conflation, which does happen in folklore and these, you know, stories and stuff. Like, okay, these bridges are really close to each other. Somebody, you know, probably was at one bridge and said, oh, I think there's stories of people being hanged here, and they had the wrong bridge. And then it became the story of, you know, of the hanged people on Suicide Bridge. That's what I'm guessing happened, because I cannot find any record of anyone actually, you know, having killed themselves on, you know, so-called Suicide Bridge. Now, the interesting thing is, as far as the soldiers hanged on Saks-covered bridge, there's no real record of that either. That is one of these stories that, you know, someone started telling about Gettysburg that became sort of known and quote-unquote true because enough people told it. But there's no real historical record of, you know, Longstreet hanging anybody from that bridge. And Chad and I were discussing it, and we kind of thought, you know, if you're in this great big battle in Gettysburg and you have, you know, deserters that you want to make an example of, there's a lot going on in the Battle of Gettysburg. If you're not familiar with it, it's a very intense battle over the course of 3 days, I believe. Was it three, Chad?
I think so.
Yeah. It's the largest battle of the Western Hemisphere.
Yeah, it's very intense. I mean, it's just...
Yeah, yeah, it was super intense.
People are moving around, you know, troop movements going left and right, and it's, you know, things are popping off here and there. Who's got time to hang three people? If you wanted to deal with deserters, you just pop them in the head, bang, 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 and be done with them. You don't have time to make a big display of hanging, you know, these guys. So it seems to be an interesting story and not much more than that. Again, you know, if it's true, we can't find any historical documentation of these soldiers being hanged. However, and this is where we get to the very interesting aspects of ghosts and these ghost hunters. There have been several people who reported seeing apparitions of hanged Confederate soldiers on Saks-covered bridge.
Uh-oh.
very, very interesting. Not just for the fact that, to our knowledge, these soldiers were never hanged there, but also Sacks-Covered Bridge has been rebuilt. It's not even in the same location that it was during the Battle of Gettysburg.
Right, right.
So you have these very, very interesting, you know, which calls me to sit, get a question like, what exactly are we talking about when we're talking about ghosts? Because if people are seeing the spirits of dead people that never actually lived, then we need a new definition of what ghosts are, which I'm absolutely fine with. I think we need a new definition for ghosts anyway.
That seems like the Tulpa effect is going on there, because you got all these people just coming there all the time. And we just talked about how many people go there all throughout the whole year. It's got to be thousands of people.
Oh yeah.
And like, there's a lot of energy being put into trying to find ghosts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're being told these stories, you know, and they bring this energy to it. And I think the same thing happened with Suicide Bridge. I don't know if Suicide Bridge was always a, you know, quote unquote negative place, but if that many people visit it and they bring the ideas of these stories and this, you know, this idea, and they're approaching the area with that, I mean, that certainly adds to the atmosphere, you know?
Right. Yeah, it absolutely does. So let's get into some of you guys' personal experiences there. And obviously, we don't want to give the whole shebang away, since we want people to seek this out and listen to it. But what are some of the things that you guys experienced? And Chad, if you want to lead the way on that, that's, since you apparently were took the brunt of this whole thing. So
yeah. Oh geez, where to start? Oh man. Well, one thing that I've found, I've been there with Tim and without Tim at different times during the day, you know, at night, at dusk, even, you know, broad daylight. I've always found that there's this one spot and there's always this hint of a mist on this one side. I mean, even if it's just barely, I could take a picture from the bridge via from the Red Rock, not facing the Red Rock Road side, but facing the other side. And even during the daylight, you'll see a hint of a mist in this one spot on what was the old road. That's one thing I've had happen. I think was it the first night, Tim? I got really violently ill. I can't remember. Yeah. We were there so many times.
I mean, the second time we went, you were literally, I think, you know, taken down to your knees.
Yeah.
Yeah. The first night was the first time you even suggested like something there is, you know, in your words, I think you said,
yeah,
draining us. You know,
and yes,
the first time that we brought up this idea of something, you know, vampiric almost in a sense being there.
It's cold. Like, and when I say cold, I'm not saying like physical cold. It's almost like you're being drained, and it's not like the classic, you know, ghost thing when you go into a room and it's like, oh, the temperature's dropped. It didn't feel like that at all. It felt like literally the warmth was being drawn out of my body in certain spots. I mean, it would almost like take the breath away from me at times. I'm trying to think it would almost be like being dropped. Do you guys ever jump into cold, really super ice cold water?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, when you get that moment where you just like, you're in there for a while and you just feel like the warmth is being pulled out of you
from the inside.
Yeah. That's what I felt from the inside out. Yes. That's the best way I could describe it. So I had that happen. And that was really, you know, that was even on an August night. It was hot. It was warm out, and you just could feel it. And it was debilitating, was the best way to say it. I mean, the one time me and Tim actually, I went down, I had to sit down, and then Tim went down on his knees and he's like, we need to get up. We need to get moving. That was very eye opening, to say the least. So I'll let you go then now, Tim.
Well,
I'm trying not to give it all away.
Yeah. And you know, there were numerous poltergeist like things that would happen while we were there. And we got several of these on tapes, you know, the bangs from the bridge and knocks and so forth from the bridge and from the surrounding area. Sometimes these would sound like they issued from the bridge. And we've had, you know, skeptical people kind of be like, well, that's the bridge cooling at night. It's cooling. But these happen way into the night. They happen all times a year when the bridge hasn't, in the winter, when the bridge hasn't had time to heat up. And in the summer, long after the bridge has, you know, been cooling down. And they happen at very interesting times as well. They'll happen in concurrence with, you know, asking questions. Sometimes you'll get these knocks or just at very, you know, specific opportune moments. And I'm thoroughly, sometimes they come from the woods. Sometimes they come from the steel. Sometimes they feel like they're right underneath your feet on the bridge. I'm absolutely convinced that whatever is going on there with the knocking is not the bridge cooling. There's something else going on there. It's very, very, very poltergeist like kind of effects that happen with some regularity. And in fact, that's the first thing I had heard. Like I said, those ghost hunters talking about this, you know, something was banging on the bridge. And probably the thing when we would meet people there and talk to them and ask them about their experience, that's probably the thing we'd hear most. People talking about, you know, bangs or knocks coming from the bridge. Secondary to that would be things walking on the bank below the bridge or hitting the ground below the bridge or walking in the brush, you know, beside them near the bridge. We've gotten a lot of that as well from people. So
walking in the creek also.
Yeah. Walking in the creek. Yeah. We've heard all of that. We've absolutely heard all of that. It's quite enticing, really. I mean, it makes you keep coming back. And then when it doesn't happen, you almost get to, you know, cause some nights we go there and not much happens and you almost get disappointed because there'd be these other nights where just things are popping and knocking and just, you know, weird sounds and weird lights going off all over the place. And it was quite active. I mean, certainly, you know, when it was at its most active, it's probably been in the most active place we've ever been, I'd say.
You've been to a lot of active places, so that's saying something.
Yeah. I will say this. The one knock that happened below our feet, that was really, really disconcerting. That actually was like the end of one of the nights, and I literally felt it hit below me and Tim's feet, and you can feel the vibration through the bridge. And there was nobody underneath the bridge. There was nothing underneath there banging. And we were like, okay, we're out. That was the one moment we were like, we're done.
Yeah, we had gotten all this activity earlier in the night, and we decided to just leave a recorder there and go. So we left a recorder. We hid one in the brush, you know, alongside the bridge, just to, you know, see what sounds we could capture when we weren't there. So we left and for about 20 minutes, half an hour, and came back. And we were done at that point. We were just going to gather a recorder and go. And Chad goes over and, you know, climbs into the brush and picks the recorder up. And as we're making our way back across the bridge, that bang came. And like Chad said, we could feel it in our feet. It was so forceful and so aggressive that it sped us up and put us on our way.
So it's,
we were hurried.
It's overwhelmingly not welcoming, would you say? Or do you feel like, because you're drawn to it at the same time, Chad, right? So it's like, is this like a getaway or come hang out with us thing?
Here's the thing. That night that we left the recorder, we were hearing all, that was, Tim, would you say that was the most active night that night?
I think so. I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. We were on the one side of the bridge. We were parked on the Red Rock Road side. And when you park there, you can basically park all but on the bridge. And we were having a ton of stuff going on over on the other side. I don't want to say the bad side because that's not really the best way to put it, but the more active side. And that was the night, you know, we really were feeling this, the draining. And as soon as we went back over to the bridge, where the vehicle was sitting, it would start up. it was almost like it was wanting us to come over. You know, like we left the recorder and we sat in the car for a little bit. And I'm like, you start hearing all these noises. So it's like it uses that to, I shouldn't even say it.
Yeah.
But it's like whatever's going on there, it's like it uses that to want to draw you over to that side. So that's was my impression that night, for what it's worth. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with all of this. It's, you know, we go out in the woods, you know, 12 miles from nowhere and, you know, have all this spooky stuff happen. And it's scary. It's really scary. But it's also super addictive, you know, and the bridge is the same way. The bridge is the same way. It's scary, but it's super addictive. I mean, you know, and when it's happening, it's just like, wow, this is incredible. And the feeling is, it's, I mean, to me, there's no feeling like it. I can only imagine that it's like being addicted to a drug, because I can't not do this stuff now. I'm just so, and I think Chad would agree, it's just something we sort of crave to do. And it's not that it's not scary. It is, it can be very scary. You know, sometimes more than others, but that feeling is, boy, it's addictive. It's really enticing.
Would you call it transcendent?
I hadn't thought that deeply about it. This is like the person asking at Strange Realities if I thought Strange Familiars was a initiation ritual, and I had I hadn't even thought about that. And possibly, you know, that whatever we're doing is in some way like that. I don't want to give it that much weight, because that changes things a little bit for me.
Gotcha.
It could be. It could be.
Yeah, that was a good question.
Yeah, that was excellent question. It's not like we go out into any of these areas expecting anything. Like, honestly, until that first night, I never even heard of the bridge. I never heard of any of the activity. I had no expectations when I went there the first night.
So, and that's kind of opposite for you, Tim.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was kind of like sort of downplaying it, because like I said, my first visit with Adam was kind of like, although I did get that one weird picture when we were there, Adam, that I published in the book. There's definitely some kind of light on that bridge. It's not an orb. If you blow it up, it looks like a little flame, and it's in front of the ironwork. I took it there that first night when we were there. But, I was almost kind of downplaying it to Chad, like, there's a bunch of legends about this place. I mean, we can go there. It's a place to go, you know, let's see what happens, you know? And then I guess we were pleasantly surprised.
It's always cool to experience a place first and then like really dive into the research after, like, you really feel like you got some kind of clue into something deeper.
Yeah. Like I said, in the book, when Adam and I went there, I was, it's kind of on the tails of writing Beyond the Seventh Gate, where I, you know, debunked a bunch of these local legends about Toad Road and kind of told the real story about the place. Not that there's not paranormal stuff there, but there was a lot of silliness, you know, that about gates to hell and stuff that I debunked. And I kind of consider myself immune to these sort of, urban legend kind of things. And I was kind of flippant about it when we went there because of that, I think. And I have changed my tune. I think those urban legends somehow play into whatever's going on at these places.
Yeah, the light was very strange that you took the picture of, and that's one of the aspects. I want to talk about a little bit about some of the aspects of some of the things that you guys experienced. So, the lights is one. Have you seen lights at that location since then, or just that one time?
Oh no, tons.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tons. Yeah.
And not just at the bridge itself, also in the area around the bridge, like out in the fields. you know, that are around the bridge and the small little woodland that's there. So it's not just there at the bridge.
And also, you guys heard gunshots in the woods at one point too. Like, I think you actually got this recorded.
Yeah, we've recorded, you know, I mean, it's Gettysburg, right? But at 2 in the morning, you know, which sounds like the one sounds like cannon fire. I mean, it's really low.
Yeah, it was loud.
And really loud. You know, could somebody nearby be firing something offshore? Why not? But, you know, 2 in the morning near the battlefield. And there are all these reports, people, you know, talking about, you know, this like ghostly gunfire they hear all around the battlefields, not just there, but, you know, from all over the place. So, yeah, I caught, you know, more than one thing that sounds like gunfire, you know, on the tapes as we were on the bridge. What that was, I don't know. One thing I didn't catch on tape, because it happened right when we got there and we just got out of the truck, is we heard a baby crying. And this is on a cold November night. Mm. Right when we got out and we hear this baby crying, and we looked at each other and Chad's like, somebody has a baby here. And I was like, yeah, I guess maybe. But, you know, we quickly looked around. We couldn't see anybody with a baby there. Now, could there have been somebody somewhere with a baby that we didn't see? Sure, that's possible. But it was a cold November night. It's an odd place to have a baby.
Well, there you go. Like, along with suicides, that's usually the legends with surrounding bridges.
Right, right. And, well, and
women throwing babies off, yeah.
John Teal talks about, you know, car door slams and baby crying being the two most common, you know, anomalous sounds heard at these places.
The baby crying stuff really freaks me out. That's freaky, man. That's just because it's just not only the fact that it's like a baby, but just the fact that knowing everything I know now, it's like that could be something pretending to be a baby to lure you into the woods and take you somewhere. You know, like that's just creepy. But the car door sounds, you've heard that on way more than one occasion now.
I've heard that on a few different occasions. We've recorded it on one when we were 3 miles into the woods along the Susquehanna River on a Bigfoot investigation. It was before the first Strange Realities. It was right before then, because I hurt my knee because we were coming out
that's
of that
right.
place.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
And I fell, but it was on that investigation. But we record it, and it's clear as day. You can hear a car door slam, and there was no cars anywhere near us. Like I said, we were 3 miles into the woods there at that point, and in this little creek valley up against the Susquehanna River. We checked for boats just to, you know, make sure there were no boats on the river right beside us. There was nothing there. So yeah, I've heard it a couple times and I've recorded it once, and I don't know if that's the only time the anomalous car door slam sound's been recorded, but you know, I recorded it. So
does it have that old car door sound? You know, because it'd be a little, they're a little different than now.
It's a very kind of hollow thunk. You know, it sounds. Okay. I mean, it just sounds like a car door slam to me. You know, I had somebody tell me that it was the sound that Sasquatch make when they pop through from another dimension. It's popping.
Wow.
It's like
as a
popping, a
matter of fact, actually.
Yeah, it's a popping gas bubble or something, and they recognize the sound from the recording. And I mean, more power to them. You know, maybe they're right, but that seemed very specific to me. It's like, oh, you got that from that recording. Wow, and that's amazing.
Chad, I think we've heard it on Toad Road also, didn't we?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
When we hiked Toad Road, we were in the middle. We heard it in there too.
But this is where a car wouldn't be, right?
Yeah. None of these places are.
No.
Yeah. Right. Now, if I heard that sound on Eisenhower Bridge, I would absolutely just think, oh, it's a car. I mean, there was a car. Now, and we did hear like a beeping sound that sounded like a you know, your car, your door alarm or something when you leave your car door open. But there was no cars there, and Chad's car was, you know, locked and shut, so you know, I don't know what that was.
And then also, you guys saw a lot of owls, which isn't unusual.
Heard them more than saw them. I think the only Chad only saw the one that one night when we were in the woods, I think, there, but we heard them.
we were in the woods by Sachs Bridge,
is
where we were that time.
But yeah, we heard, and honestly, it was strange, familiars, listeners, that so we do, you know, a lot of these on-site episodes and stuff where we record when we go out. And it was Strange Familiars listeners who started saying, you know, every time, not every time, but like often before you guys say, you know, I saw something or you know, I heard something, there'll be an owl on your recordings that goes off. And I had never, I mean, you know, owls are natural sounds in the background. Of course, I'm aware of, you know, the whole Mike Clellan, you know, owls and the supernatural thing. But, you know, when you're out in the woods and you hear an owl, it's up until that point, we were kind of like, oh, owl. But then people started pointing out like, hey, this stuff is like happening after the owls sound off when you're recordings. And then I think it was the first night we were there, we met a couple. The second night we came back, the same couple was there, and it did randomly. And we interviewed them both times. And it was the second night we were at the bridge, we were interviewing this couple, Bethany and Shannon. And they mentioned, they said, hey, when the owls start going off here, that's when stuff gets crazy. And it was interesting because if someone, you know, whoever Strange Familiars listener mentioned that to me, had just mentioned that to me. So it was kind of in my mind. And then they told us that. And then we started making note of it. And it kind of seems to be true. I mean, it's a little weird and a little hokey, but it really did follow. Like you start hearing the owl and then stuff started happening. And I think that ghost, the guy who led the ghost tours, Clinton, I think he agreed with that, didn't he, Chad? Didn't he say that was the case for him too?
Yeah. Yeah. He actually mentioned it and we didn't even say anything to him about it.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, he mentioned, you know, so whenever there was an owl hoot, you know, something's going to happen. I mean, it was to the point, Adam, we were walking back to the car. We're like, oh, this night's done. And we were walking back to the truck. And next thing you know, we hear an owl hoot and we both looked at each other and turned around and went back to the bridge and, had stuff happen. You know, I'm not saying it's like that all the time, but it definitely makes our ears prick up when that happens. But yeah, Clinton had definitely mentioned that independently of us.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's
creepy shit.
Always interesting when you put owls into this stuff. Yeah.
But like for anyone who wants, I just can't wait till people get to actually hear this stuff because it's more than a podcast. It's like we were talking about before you came on, Tim. It's like a audio documentary and a sound collage and like these strange sounds that you get. You know, you highlight them and point them out and repeat them, and like it's really an experience.
Yeah, I'm super psyched for it. And you know, I don't know. Do we have a couple extra minutes to talk about the ghost box stuff?
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, we haven't even touched on that.
Yeah.
Because that became like, so when I approached this stuff, you know, a lot of paranormal books are just, you know, basically lists of things, of weird things that happen in places, which is fine. And they do serve a purpose. But I always feel like there's a story running through this stuff. And if you can find the story, you can kind of, it makes it more interesting, at least to me. And when we started using the ghost box, that one of the stories anyway at this place really kind of became clear to us. So we were doing what we call modified Estes method. I don't know where that comes from other than Hellier. That's where I learned it. I give full credit to the folks at Hellier. Wouldn't have known about the Estes method without them. Seems like a good way to use the ghost box though. So Chad seems like we said, kind of more in tune with this place. We thought he'd be the quote unquote medium. He would listen to the ghost box. So he's listening with headphones. He didn't wear a blindfold because basically just like, I'm not being blindfolded on this bridge. No way. But I did stand behind him. So he could not see me. And I would ask questions. He could not hear me because he had the headphones on. I could not hear the ghost box. So it creates the separation. So, you know, essentially he's not being influenced by my questions. I'm not being influenced by the ghost box's responses. Chad's just saying out loud what he's getting from the ghost box. And we were getting, sometimes we do this and we get kind of nonsense and it doesn't make any sense. And, you know, there's nothing to it. And before we go any further, I've heard all the you know, people's skepticism regarding ghost box, for everything from, it's all, you know, essentially audio pareidolia. You're making more of it than what it is, to it's you're influencing the outcomes yourself. I'm fine with all that. If it's nothing, then I still think it's cool to find these patterns. And some of these questions seem to be very, very, some of these answers rather seem to be very pointed and to the questions. So if it's, you know, just random nonsense, it's interesting in the way that, you know, rolling a dice, a die is interesting too. You know, if you want to talk about outcomes and so forth and chaos theory and all that craziness. And if it's us influencing it, if it's not some other thing, if it's, you know, this was me and Chad, this was us influencing, to me, that's very valuable information as well. Very cool. And, you know, part of the story. But in any case, we started doing it and we were getting, like I said, they seemed to be replying to the questions I was asking in vague ways. And my thought on this is, so a ghost box is basically a radio receiver that runs through, it'll keep cycling through the dial and it'll stop and you'll hear snippets of voices. So Chad will be listening. He'll just say whatever snippets he's hearing. So my thought is like, if there is something other that's using the ghost box to communicate, it is limited to whatever speech is coming across the airwaves. So it can't say whatever it wants, but it can hint at things and it can give you, you know, ideas of things. So when you get these sort of things that seem to answer your questions, to me, it's very, very interesting because, like I said, we've been at places where we've used it and it's just been nonsense. It's been, you know, it's kind of been like, okay, this is not, whatever's going on here is not really answering any questions. An example is we went to a Hans Graf cemetery in Lancaster County. It's a little bit north of Columbia there where we have Albatwitch Day. Supposed to be a haunted cemetery, and we did it there, and just none of the answers made any sense. It was like random, complete randomness. Well, that wasn't the case on the bridge. It's like all the answers seem, you know, pretty pointed. But at some point, we were doing this, and the response I got was, "You're the one, you know." So this is, I'm asking questions, and then, you know, so this comes back in Chad's voice, is that you're the one rings around me. And I was given this impression. I literally just saw myself drawing a magic circle on this bridge, burning offerings and trying to like manifest or summon whatever was there, to the point where like, I don't do that stuff. Like that's, you know, maybe my old days when I was deep into, you know, the magic stuff, but that's not really stuff I mess around with like that anymore. But I contacted Ren. I remember I was like, "Hey, I'm thinking about doing this thing on this bridge, this ritual," and kind of getting his advice and some other people's advice on how to approach this, because I really thought I'd seen a glimpse of something, you know, I had to do, maybe something that I was supposed to do. And even talked to Chad. I was like, yeah, I think we got to do this. And I'm not comfortable with it, but I think we're going to have to, you know, draw this magic circle on the bridge and try to manifest whatever this is. But enough time went by where I started thinking more about it. And the one thing that started bugging me is like when I had that flash, it's like, I don't know, I'll call it a vision. It was this very, very clear image of me doing this ritual, like Chad wasn't there. And that started to bug me because Chad was there with me every time. Like every time I went to the bridge anyway. Chad went a couple times without me, but every time I went, Chad was there always. And I was like, well, where was Chad in this? Like, where was Chad in this? And at some point I was just like, nah, I feel like I'm being led to do this. I don't think I want to do this. And I let go of the idea of doing it. And, you know, I felt I was almost being like cowardly, like I wasn't manifesting this like future I was supposed to manifest. But the more I let go of the idea, the more relaxed I felt about it. And I thought, okay, I don't think I want to do that. I don't think I should be doing that after all. And gave up on the idea and kind of put it away. And then when we were interviewing that ghost guide, Clinton, on the bridge there, he mentioned that He said, one of my friends came up here one night and they found a big pentagram drawn on the bridge. And it hit me like, I wonder if I was like somehow catching impressions of whatever, you know, that person, whoever drew that pentagram, maybe they were doing, you know, the ritual that I thought I was supposed to do. I don't know. It really brought it full circle for me. And it became like sort of part of the story for me, like this idea that I was being sort of led to this ritual or else given a glimpse of a ritual that someone else had done there.
That's wild. I mean, not only, you know, hearing that, but then, you know, really seeing that. And that was kind of like, you really felt like it was an impression that was kind of like pushed on you, or there was nothing that was really like priming you for that. It just appeared in your mind. It
literally, when he said, "You're the one, rings around me," I literally got this image. I mean, like full ritual robes, drawing a circle on the bridge, you know, lighting candles and burning offerings. It came right to me. And I was like, we have to do this. We have to do that. I mean, Chad can tell you, I talked to him for, you know, a couple weeks about it. Like, yeah, I think we're going to have to do it. I wasn't happy about it. Like I said, I wasn't super comfortable about it. I thought like, we really have to do this. And then, you know, I let go, like I said, when I let go of that idea that I had to do it, I became way more at peace with the bridge, with everything regarding it. And then when that guy Clinton told that story, I just thought, you know, it kind of reminded me of, you know, Soraya's idea of the, you know, his holistic theory of the paranormal, where he has, you know, we're getting kind of echoes of the future sometimes. And I half wonder if I wasn't picking up on, you know, whatever that guy was talking about, whatever, you know, ritual that his friend stumbled on there. Because we never saw any circles drawn on the bridge when we were there. I don't think, Chad.
Mm-hmm. No.
But yeah, it was definitely became a big part of the story for me anyway, because it was very moving and very scary. If you know, the idea that it's like, because I wasn't comfortable. I was like, I'm not comfortable doing this, Chad, but I think we have to do it. And Chad, you know, to Chad's credit, he's like, okay.
Chad, how did you feel when you were doing it?
When I was doing the Estes method?
Mm-hmm.
Really, it leaves me drained whenever I do it. Mm-hmm. And it's not just at the bridge, because I've done it at other places. But really there, it definitely left me drained when I was doing it. We have a rule, like if Tim taps me on the shoulder, you know, because I can't see him because my back is to him. And when he taps me on the shoulder, we're done. And it's like, it's time for us to leave or we're done. But when I was doing it, I'm just like listening intently, you know, to the ghost box as it's cycling. And I don't know when he's asking questions. I don't know what he's asking. I just say what I hear. Sometimes I actually even yell it. And I just remember when I said that, I was like, wow, I was just like listening to that. And when it happened, when I said those words, rings around me, it was kind of like, you know, what was that? You know, where did that come from? Because it was really, really odd. You know, who says that on a, you know, on the radio, you know, and where did that come from? You know, that was what I was thinking at the moment. I was like, well, that was kind of an odd one. And as we were going through and he was talking about doing the ceremony, part of me was like, yeah, we really need, you know, I was pushing him at first to do it. And I'm like, yeah, we need to do this. We need to find out why that was said. Why you had that impression, you know, to continue the story, because it was almost like a narrative was being played out. But then I saw how upset he was about it, because like he was really concerned. There was a point in time where he was really concerned about it. And I'm like, you know what, maybe, and he said, I don't know. And I'm like, well, maybe we shouldn't do it. You know, the more I thought about it, I'm like, I don't think really it's a good idea. And, you know, why do we have to do it? You know, why let this thing, whatever it is, determine what's going to happen?
Right.
You know, yeah. that was how I felt. But like I said, when I do the spirit box, usually I'm listening to what's going on, but afterwards I'm usually really drained, especially that night. I mean, did I get sick the next morning then? Was that one of the mornings I was sick?
It could have been, yeah.
I think I had a massive, massive, massive migraine. I mean, I literally was physically sick the next day after that.
And a lot of times, yeah, Chad will be done and he'll be like, what did I say? And I was like,
I don't remember it all the time.
Yeah. And I was like, I'll try to explain. And I was like, I'll have to give you the recording because like I can't even explain everything that went down. Cause yeah, sometimes he's just like, I'm like, yeah, like I think that particular session ended with like, get out, run. And I tapped him on the shoulder. He's like, what? I'm like, it said, get out, run, dude. like, not that we always obey that, but you know, sometimes it certainly hits a nerve.
I'm curious what, if you can share what recommendations or methods Ren recommended.
I forget. I mean, he gave me a whole list of things to do, and you know, I'm sure if Ren's listening to this, he's like, well, I would have gone out there the next night and done that.
Yeah,
and I'm sure he would have, and I'm absolutely sure he would have. And
it's probably what you were picking up on is when we take Ren out there. That's probably what you were picking up on.
But my point
sometime
was
this, in the future, you know,
and it's completely okay for him to do that. You know what I mean? The thing that hit me was like, wait a minute, this isn't something I do and it's not something I want to do. Right. But I felt so compelled to do it, that I was really disturbed by it. And I think it was Chad who finally sort of like gave me permission, you know, sort of not to do it. He's like, well, don't do it just because you think you should, you know what I mean? Because this thing, you know, you feel like this thing told you to do it. And, you know, that, like I said, I started thinking about, I was like, yeah, I don't do that. Like, that's not something I do. And it's not something I really want to do. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm not saying people shouldn't do that. If you feel, you know, if that's your path, you know, do it. And you know, if Ren wants to visit and do that there, that's, you know, he's welcome to. I'll show him the place and stand guard while he does it. But just for me personally, it was like, nah, I just don't think this is for me.
I can totally relate with something similar. And yeah, like ultimately it's your will and your path for you living your life right now. And maybe whatever is like trying to get you to, you know, do something just doesn't have any other options. And if you show up, you know, you can be the conduit, but that doesn't have to be your choice.
Right. And again, it may not have been, you know, something other at all. It may have been me at that moment picking up on whatever other ritual. Like I said, that guy Clinton said his friend came upon, you know, when he found the big pentagram drawn on the bridge, as he called it, that, you know, could have easily been a magic circle for the same purpose. Maybe I was just picking up on that, you know, and it wasn't meant for me at all. Maybe it's just something someone else did that I was kind of picking up on at that moment.
I wanted to ask a little bit too about this buried treasure connection.
Mm-hmm.
This was something interesting that just kind of pops in there.
Yeah, buried treasure theory is something I brought to Josh, I think, before we even wrote Where the Footprints End. I was like, you know, you ever thought about the, you know, buried treasure in association with all this? And at first, I think he's kind of like, what? And I was like, no, think about it. Like, and not just the idea of like a treasure, you know, pirate's gold, you know, buried in the ground, but the idea of something valuable being in the ground. And how many of these stories from all over have these instances of, you know, there'll be a ghost story, but they're also, you know, a story of a lost silver mine nearby. Toad Road has a supposed lost silver mine, you know, or these stories of Bigfoot, you know, plenty of stories of Bigfoot with people saying that, oh, they live in the mines. They live in these old mines and they come out at night. You know, so not necessarily like gold buried in the ground, but the idea of something valuable being in the ground and people digging after it or something valuable coming out of the ground. And we really started looking at that whenever we find these, you know, so-called hot spots or window areas or whatever you're talking about. We started looking for you know, things that would qualify for buried treasure. And, you know, there's I can't get specific about it, but the place we go to called Site 7 has a significant component of that. Like I said, Toad Road has the rumors of a supposed silver mine that was there, lost silver mine. I don't think it's true, but the rumors are there. Michaux, they were doing, you know, iron mining throughout Michaux. There's different mines and so forth. They were digging into the ground there. So it's this idea of there being something valuable in the ground and people digging into the ground. And we're almost 100% where we find stuff as regards to these places where people have been digging in the ground. I mean, look at Skinwalker Ranch. One of the big no-nos is don't ever dig into the ground. Mm. It was when I guess the first family that bought it, were they the Shermans, or was that just the name they gave them in the book? I forget now. In any case, they were told when they bought it, like, or no, when they sold it to the NIDS people, they told them, like, oh, don't dig in the ground. Whatever you do, don't dig in the ground. So these kind of warnings about digging in the ground, and how many old ghost stories and fairy stories have, you know, ideas about things being in the ground or ghosts guarding buried treasures and so forth. But it's really played out completely. I mean, almost 100% where we start looking for, you know, where people have been digging in the ground nearby these places. And we found there was a quarry not far. It's called Willoughby Run Quarry. Willoughby Run is the creek that so-called Suicide Bridge spans. And a little bit further up the creek, there was a quarry right along there called Willoughby Run Quarry, where they've been digging in the ground. Of course, Gettysburg has had people digging in the ground, you know, for ages, for, you know, relic hunting. They shouldn't. They're not supposed to, but it happens. People dig for, you know, Civil War relics and stuff. So, you know, there's definitely this sort of buried treasure theory certainly fits in the area of the Suicide Bridge there.
And with all that treasure hunting lore, is the guardians of the treasure often too.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And the bridge is iron. And of course you and Josh have explored a lot of that stuff.
Cold iron.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And that was not lost on me. That this bridge forms a border, you know, and it's made out of iron. And we were even sort of playing with the idea that something is being held, you know, in this area. It's not really an island between these two bridges, but it almost is, like the creeks almost make an island out of it. And we were wondering if something wasn't sort of trapped in that area and being, you know, held. If, you know, there's all these theories about, you know, vampires can't cross water and witches and fairies and stuff don't like iron. And here we have an iron bridge. And if all the activity was concentrated on the area of this bridge, because it's, you know, it's like the one thing that's holding them in, you know, holding these things. That's absolutely a component that we've wondered about. And it does seem like when you cross over that bridge, it's not that we never had any activity on the other side, but by far most of the activity is on the opposite side. So we park on where Red Rock Road is. It's on the other side of the bridge, you know, with a quote unquote island. Like I said, it's not an island, but it's like, that's where the majority of the activity is concentrated. And certainly the really rough stuff, the stuff that was making Chad sick, the stuff that was really scaring people, is concentrated on that side of the bridge.
Yeah. A lot of this is like, I feel like us rediscovering the way that people used to think about things with this weird kind of like psychogeography and things like bridges and all of this used to be, I think, a lot more mystical to people.
Yeah. Yeah. I think our ancestors looked at the landscape in a different way than we do today, where they incorporated, you know, folklore into their vision in ways that we don't.
And so even like those impressions that they were leaving on these places that we inhabit now, you know, some of this could be us catching the after effect of some of that, especially what you do. I mean, like I think some people kind of experience the stuff when they're coming of age and they like are trying to get away from adults and go party or do whatever they're doing, going to these liminal spaces, you know, out in the, like the woods or abandoned industrial parks or whatever. But, you know, it is, it gets harder to get away with, I know, when you're older. But it's really cool how, you know, so much of your research and experience is based on this like exploration and legend tripping, and it's borne a lot of fruit for you.
It really has. And, you know, a lot of people have asked me, like, I want to do this in my area. Where do I start? Start with those local legends, because there's usually something behind them.
I'd like to get your thoughts before we kind of close out, what you guys think about the interconnectedness of all this phenomenon. You know, it's something that we talked about a lot on this show, and I know Tim's talked a lot about on his show, and Soraya, and just how you've got all these different things going on. I mean, you've got these different ghosts, Bigfoot, UFOs, any of this type of stuff, and these even things down to like synchronicities and all this, and just how it really seems like we're dealing with the same type of thing. It's like we tend to put, like I said many times on this show, we tend to put things in boxes. But just recently, Tim, on his most recent episodes, he had on this guy that had several different types of experiences, Everett. And, you know, I listened to that, and, you know, it's very much the same type of experiences you guys have had with, like, the witch cloud stuff. I think that it really, the same theme is there of just how interconnected all this is. That we're not dealing with, like, Bigfoot over here and then UFOs over here. And then, you know, we're talking about really the umbrella of the other is really what we're talking about.
So how I look at this is, when I started this journey with Tim, and it is a journey, you know, this has been a journey for me, I knew nothing about most of this stuff. I mean, I had read, you know, I've had my own experiences, you know, and like most people, I put things in boxes. So that was a ghost, that was a dead thing, you know, Bigfoot is a monkey in the woods, so on and so forth. And when I've had that first experience, and this goes all, I mean, I've had experiences growing up, but when I had that first real eye opener at White Rocks, which is the one that really like shook me, and I started, you know, doing some research and stuff, I still didn't have that holistic view. That's how I say it, of, you know, this all being interconnected. But as I go on these journeys, as I go to these different places, as we research stuff and we experience more stuff randomly, a lot of it's randomly, because it's not like I said, when we go to these places, we don't have preconceived ideas most of the time, actually a lot of the times. I see this, it's like my eyes have been opened and I see this interconnectability. You know, it's to the point now, like, oh yeah, you know, somebody tells us, oh yeah, I've seen Bigfoot, and there's lights in the woods, and yeah, there's a haunted area over there. It's, you know, when we start to do research on these places, we start to notice, you see that, you know, like you said, the digging in the ground, you know, we automatically look for that. We, you know, go back and we look for legends of lights in the area or near the area, or UFOs in the sky and haunted, you know, places and cryptid activity. And you invariably find that.
And the bridge, you know, is the perfect example of this. So
exactly. I was about to say that, but he's correct. It's perfect example. Yeah. It's the research we do, I look for Bigfoot sightings, and we found the Bigfoot sightings in the area. The digging in the ground, but the bridge is a perfect, like, little microcosm, you know, because it is a small area, microcosm area of example of this.
And when we met that couple, Bethany and Shannon there, you know, they're talking about a woman who killed herself, and she's a sensitive, and she had impressions of this woman and so forth. And that's all well and good. The second time we meet them there, they're talking about this entity that they saw on the bridge. They pulled up and they saw something
yeah.
on the other side of the bridge. We said, well, describe what you saw. Now, to them, this was a ghost. But what they described to us was something that was, he said, it was as wide as Chad and I together. So something very broad. He said it was, I think, at least as tall as us, with long
taller
arms.
Taller than us.
With long arms that hung down, you know, longer than human arms. And that was white and kind of lumbered off. And at no point is he thinking like this is anything but a ghost. And again, there was those two ghost hunters. I forget their names, one from New York and one from somewhere in Pennsylvania. We met there, and they're talking about seeing a 7 foot tall, you know, black thing cross the path in front of them. You know, so now we got ghosts of 7 foot tall, you know, Civil War soldiers. You know, the average height of people was what men was like 5'6" back then or something. You know, at no point are these people thinking, you know, cryptid activity or anything, but they're talking about things hitting the ground below the bridge. We're hearing knocks off in the woods beside it. That guy Clinton described something walking along the bank and he could hear it, you know, bipedal walking. Yeah. We heard bipedal walking. It was kind of beside us one night. We heard it splash into the creek. So, you know, as somebody who does a lot with Bigfoot, like, oh yeah, this is all cryptid stuff. Even down to the first people I heard talking about it, something banging on the bridge that they couldn't see. I'm thinking like, yeah, banging is, I mean, you know, it's also poltergeist stuff, but it's certainly, you know, Sasquatch stuff. I've had, you know, plenty of stories of Sasquatch, you know, banging on things. So we had that, you know, and you have your mystery lights there, and the ghost hunters attribute all this stuff to ghosts. Even it's like, what ghost, I mean, where are we getting a person that's taller than Chad and I with, you know, arms that hang down to their knees, that's as wide as Chad and I put together? Like, what Civil War soldier right. looks like that, you know?
Right. If they had more of them, maybe the Confederacy would have won the war or something, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah,
I was about to
say that was the Confederate super soldier. That, you know, they failed to unleash, you know?
And still roaming around the ground.
Yeah.
Awaiting his orders.
Jefferson Davis had his best genetic scientists.
Yeah, he's hiding in the caves up by Big Round Top.
That's it.
Yeah, he's been there. Oh, my.
Yeah, so you get all this stuff that's like, you know, if you're a UFO person, you see the lights that we saw that, well, most of them were not in the sky. I think, you know, UFO people would say UFOs. If you're a ghost person, you say, oh, those are ghost lights. Those are ghosts carrying lanterns. You know, often those soldiers, Civil War soldiers carrying lanterns through the woods. You're seeing the ghosts of them or whatever, but no, all this stuff is popping off in this one area. And if you look at it like a cryptid guy, it looks like cryptid stuff. If you look at it like a ghost person, it looks like ghost stuff. You look at it as a UFO person, you could say it's UFO stuff, but I just feel like it's all connected now. I can't separate it at all anymore. Connected, how or why it's connected, I can't tell you, but I really do feel like it's all connected. And the bridge is a great example of this.
I agree. I think that's the main theme of your podcast audio documentary. I think that's the main theme of it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's trying to, like, especially, and when we were writing Where the Footprints End, you know, we went a great way to try to get people to, you know, step back and look at Bigfoot a different way. And I, even at that time, I remember telling Josh, I got to do this with ghosts someday. And I think he said something like, good luck. Have fun doing that. Not that that is what the Wish Cloud, you know, I certainly didn't get into the expansive sort of breakdown that we did in Where the Footprints End, but I do at least approach those ideas in the Wish Cloud in a very sort of basic way. Like, you know, like I said, if we're seeing ghosts, if people are seeing ghosts of things that A, don't look at all like humans look, the morphology is completely different, and B, they're seeing ghosts of people that never actually lived. They're of essentially, you know, just legends that people have made up. If they're seeing these ghosts there, then are they really seeing ghosts of dead people, the spirits of dead people, or are they seeing something else altogether? And hopefully, you know, I'm sure most of the ghost hunting crowd will be just as resistant to that as the flesh and blood Bigfoot people were to where the footprints end. But hopefully we can, you know, open some eyes or at least get people to look at things in a different way.
Gentlemen, this has been excellent. And we're going to continue discussion about some other things on the Patreon side. But in closing, Chad, please tell us about, you know, Ruck Rabbit Outdoors and where people can find that.
Yes, you can find Ruck Rabbit Outdoors is now a full-blown Etsy shop where we offer vintage wool and, as Tim says, outdoorsmanzy stuff. Everything from not all vintage. We also actually have some handmade items, but we have everything from camp cook stuff to the vintage wool to knives, axes, a lot of stuff that you can use. You can find us there. I also have a small YouTube channel that I started 2 years ago just for fun, and I actually show some of the places that we've been for Strange Familiars. So it's kind of been kind of like the show and tell end of Strange Familiars. So we have that there. Like, I think I actually show parts of Pandemonium, the World War II camp in Michaux, just other interesting areas that I go to. You know, just on hiking, and I even touch on like a little bit of foraging stuff and, you know, some gear reviews as far as like woodsmanship. That's where you can find that on online. So, and that's pretty much Ruck Rabbit Outdoors. Also Instagram also.
Okay. I'm noticing a lot of flannel on here, Chad.
Yeah, I see some vintage.
Oh yeah, flannel. There's a lot of flannel. There's a lot of flannel.
Are you the real flannel man?
I don't know. But I had a friend. How I met Tim is I had a friend who said he was in the podcast, and he's a member of my bushcraft community. And he basically was like, you know, he knew my penchant for wearing the wool coats, you know, the Pennsylvania tuxedo, as people call it. I literally will go out with the full on in the winter with the full on Pennsylvania tuxedo, which is the old Woolrich hunting suit. And he's like, yeah, you need to check out this podcast. They were talking about this guy, this flannel man guy. And, you know, that's totally you. And, I started listening to the podcast, and I was like, oh, this is really cool. And then I figured I'd contact him with my experience I had on White Rocks, and then the rest is history. Here I am. So never planned it that way. Just kind of fell into it. But
yeah, I corrupted him.
No, I do not.
He was a normal.
You corrupted me.
Normal woodsman before me, and now he's the paranormal woodsman.
Yeah, I am now the paranormal woodsman. Is pretty much what I am now.
That sounds like a nice title for something. The paranormal woodsman.
yeah, we're working on that. Honestly, we're working on that. So, but you know, the whole woodsman thing is basically has become my life. You know, I really enjoy being in the outdoors, and I love using axes. I'm an axe collector and aficionado. I asked Tim; he's constantly sending me pictures of axes. Do you want this one? And I enjoy also using, you know, the tools of my trade, which are, you know, knives, also all that stuff. And you know, I enjoy that lifestyle, like being out there. And that's, you know, I enjoy camping, especially this time of year. Like, believe it or not, like me and my group, you know, it's actually called, you know, it's now, it ain't just me. Ruck Rabbit Outdoors isn't just me. There's actually some other members and that contribute to the Etsy site and just contribute to what we are now. And we actually camp in the dead of winter. We enjoy it. We like being out in the winter time. So a lot of people think we're crazy for doing that, but less bugs, no heat. It's easier to stay warm than it is to get cool, and a lot less people.
Excellent. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, not a problem. I'll have to tell you a story on how the Ruck Rabbit name originated. That's quite interesting in itself, but that's for another time.
Okay. And Tim, tell people where they can find Strange Familiars, but also where they can find The Witch Cloud.
Yes, strangefamiliars.com and wherever you listen to podcasts. The Witch Cloud serves as our episode 300. You can only get it at stonebreath.bandcamp.com. The reason for that is if you buy the book there, you get the audio download free. If I've done my math right, I think it's over 3 hours of audio you get between the audio book and the bonus audio and the music and stuff. I think it's over 3 hours. Don't sue me if that's not correct, because I may have done my math wrong, but you get a lot. You get a lot with it. And you can buy just the audio if you want. If you just want the audio book, you can just do that, or you can get the nice hardcover book, and it comes with the audio download. I think it's right now the only package left. You get the book, a vinyl sticker, and a woven patch, a really cool owl woven patch I did just for this, and then the full download. Again, that's stonebreath.bandcamp.com. And this book will be released as a book by itself on, you know, be available on Amazon and everywhere else, but that'll be sometime in 2022. Right now, you can only get it directly from us.
Great. Excellent. Thank you so much, gentlemen. This has been awesome. We're going to go ahead and close out the show, but stay with us. And on our end, everything that we have, of course, our Patreon. Serviel can tell you where to find that.
You can find that at patreon.com/conspiranormal, where for only $5 a month, you can join the International Association of Conspiranormalists and get a extra episode every week, like the one we're about to do with these gentlemen. Mm-hmm. And for $10 and up, you get invited to our monthly Mystic Crew Hangout, where we have some of our favorite guests and researchers do presentations, much like you see at Strange Realities, but kind of like a mini version of that. We're actually going to be rebranding that to be a continuation of Strange Realities, so that'll get you a ticket into that for free every month. And for $20 and up, you get to join the Ancient Circle of Strange Realities. That gets you an exclusive t-shirts, and you are privy to all the secrets of the universe, of course, from the heads of these various conspiranormal orders. Patreon.com.
I know.
/ conspiranormal.
Yeah. Excellent. All right. That's it. We will be, I think next week we will be doing kind of like a little news show, kind of roundup kind of thing, just with myself and Serfiel. And also, we're going to be announcing something special thing that we're going to be doing here pretty soon. That's kind of like a podcast within a podcast. Is kind of what we're thinking. So, all right, guys, that's it. Join us next time on Conspiranormal.
Please consider becoming a Patreon at www.patreon.com/conspiranormal or leave a one-time donation at conspiranormal.com. And please check out our YouTube channel, Conspiranormal Podcast.